This is the Seahawk Show, an official podcast of FanSided's 12th Man Rising, with hosts Kevin Daggett and 12th Man Rising co-expert Lee Vowell. The show that breaks down all the latest Seahawks news. The guys thank you in advance for listening. Go Hawks!
You are right. Listening to the 12th Man Rising, 12th Man Rising Seahawks show with Kevin Daggett, and I am Todd sitting in for Lee. Hopefully it won't be too awful. We have an awesome guest tonight, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer's Michael Sean Dugar, and he knows 10 times as much about the Seahawks as I do. I make that 100. Michael Sean, we are so happy you joined us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, really excited to have you on. So let's just jump right into it. The biggest question of the offseason in Seattle, is there really strife in the Seahawks locker room? And if so, is that really going to impact the number of wins that Seattle can have this season?
I would say that in the assessment of the locker room that we got from the guys who were actually in it every day, that'd be, I think, Doug Baldwin, Michael Bennett, Sherman, Russell Wilson. I think that's all the guys who addressed it. Maybe Bobby Wagner too. I think Doug was probably the most accurate with it when he talked about how, yeah, they have tension, but they make sure that it doesn't cross that line where it becomes unhealthy. So is there a big divide? I don't think so. I don't think it's like this group of guys all hates this other group of guys. But what I've heard, like in that ESPN story where it talks about that tension in the locker room, like the anecdotes in there are accurate from what I've heard. But as far as like the overall, just we hate this guy. There's this big divide. Yeah, there are cliques, of course. And that's how, you know, humans work. But
right.
Just in terms of do people hate Russ? Yeah, there are probably some guys who, a little jealous, hey, this guy gets the superstar treatment. But as a lot of those guys pointed out, I don't think it's much different than on any other team where the quarterback is the star player. And as far as it impacting the wins, I don't think so, which is why I say Doug was probably the most accurate, saying that, yeah, we don't let it get unhealthy. Translation, we don't let it affect what goes on the field. We go out there and, yeah, we may, even if we did hate each other or there was just, I don't know, a fight the night before the Super Bowl, we can still go out and win 43-8 in the biggest game in franchise history. You know, that's probably
great point.
Best example right there. You know, fight before the biggest game ever and they go out and win 43-8. Now, obviously, that's a few years ago, but, that story, the ESPN story, kind of all started from, I think it was the loss of the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So, I mean,
right.
It goes back a few years. But, yeah, you can look at that as, you know, if you want to pull another anecdote. Yeah, it was a fight, like a big one, between prominent players, allegedly. But, yeah, it was a fight between two prominent players, and they went out and just smoked the Denver Broncos. So, I mean, you can look at it that way. That's why I don't think, no, it won't. Impact the wins, because that's what everyone wants to do. Even if we don't agree on music or food or I think you get special treatment, we all still want to win. We all want to get paid. We want to be famous. We want to be Super Bowl champions, especially people who come to Seattle, like free agents and draftees. You know, they see a winning culture and want to win. So at the end of the day, that's what everyone wants to do. If there's a couple of fights, a couple of arguments in between, that's just how it is.
So from your example, we should stop writing, oh, this locker room strife is all BS. And what really needs to happen is they have to have more locker room fights, because that leads to 43-8 wins. I got it. That's awesome. Part of the issue, of course, of this whole locker room strife thing was Sherman being vocal about his disapproval of some of the play calls and blown plays on defense. Do you think Richard Sherman is entering his last year with the team, or is this more likely just to be motivation for him in 2017?
I think he's still at a point where his value doesn't warrant. I think that was the main thing with the trade. It was the trade talks. It was just, man, we're trading an all-pro guy, And, you know, in NFL trades, it's more about, you know, the business of it than it is about, like, getting equal value for who you get rid of. So it's, like, he's still at the point where his value doesn't, like, warrant them getting rid of him, even if, you know, they're grooming, like, the Legion of Boom part two with the guys they drafted. I don't think that Sherman's on his way out. Now, what could happen in a year or two, you never really know if the NFL things happen. But I think we're forgetting, like, when we talk about, like, Sherman or just, like, his hyper-competitiveness or just any, like, football player in general, like, you got to be a little, like, crazy to play football, right? Like, not – you kind of have to, especially at this level, right? Because football, yeah, at its root, right, is the biggest, strongest, fastest guys we got running into each other for a few hours every week. And to want to do that for the money that they make compared to other professional sports, you got to be a little nuts. And especially to be motivated to do that, to think, oh, you know, my shoulder's probably torn, but I'm going to, you know, tough it out because we have this culture where playing hurt is admirable, whereas anyone else in any other industry would say, hey, that's probably a bad idea to go out and run into people if you are fairly certain that your head is throbbing, you know? So I say all that, say, was it all motivation for Sherman? Was it like was last year a bad year for him? Yes, of course. You don't just call out the coaching staff, you know, for their play call and then double down on it when the reporters, you know, ask you about it. But that also goes back, you know, to the wins. You know, in the two games where he had those blow-ups last year, Atlanta and against the Rams, those are two victories too, you know, at the end of the day. So I guess the short answer is no, I don't foresee this being his last year as of right now, but things change. And in terms of his, like, kind of that negative energy he seemed to bring, I don't see that, one, happening this year, and two, if it does, I don't see it negatively impacting the final product.
Now, one big sore spot last year was the offensive line, and it seems like nationally, it's national media still doesn't expect much out of him, expecting to be pretty poor again this year. What's your take on the offensive line? Have they improved? Do you think they'll be better next year or this coming year than they were last year?
The offensive line is interesting. There's a lot of ways to look at it. First, I look at it as, so there's really nowhere to go but up. So there's that part. Will they be improved? It'd be hard for them to not be. That's like my initial reaction. The outside, like the national media not having faith in the Seahawks. I know, like, the Seahawks, just like in this corner of the country, like, it's just a thing to, like, feel slighted. You know, just whether it's baseball, basketball, football, just it's a thing to feel like no one believes in us in this corner of the country. East Coast bias, or however you want to put it. It makes sense, though, like for the national media, because why would they be optimistic about the line, right? The only people who are the ones who are like see the little growth, the film study, the meetings, like the little things we're not going to notice in practice. Like no one sees what Cable sees. Now, that doesn't mean we should all be as optimistic as him. But as of right now, we don't really have much proof. Like if you're optimistic about the Seahawks offensive line, your line of thinking is, well, of course, the guys who weren't very good last year are going to have gotten better. Well, of course. And then you're thinking, oh, we brought in a veteran guy. You know, we were starting rookies who are now sophomores. Like, that all makes sense. But the other side of it, if you think about it, you've got Luke Jokel, who we don't know if he's any good. Like, we have an idea of what it looks like when he starts for a team, and we've seen that, and it doesn't look great. George Fant, right? The thing with George Fant is I like to remind people, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, he'll be so much better. He knows the offense now. I think he said something along the lines of, in minicamp, he was like, it feels so good to, like, know what you're doing, which is a scary line and an encouraging line at the same time. That implies that last year he didn't, which is bad for your left tackle. But you get the sense that he was so far behind last year that even if he's caught up, quote unquote, this year, is that the same thing as like a normal sophomore left tackle would be if they had a football background? You know, like I'm trying to say maybe he was so far behind the eight ball that this year he may just now be this year like where a rookie would be, like a normal rookie like would be at that position. Like you could look at it that way, and that's kind of what I like to remind people of. It's like, yeah, he'll be a sophomore, but is it almost like him being like a red shirt freshman in a way? Does that make sense? Like that's kind of how I look at Fant. So the whole unit, there's just so many questions. Like even if you have an argument of like, oh, continuity. Well, Jokel's new, Effetti's moving, Walensky's moving. Like you only got two guys who played their position. You know, Britt and George Fant from last year. So is there continuity? You know, they still have to learn to play with each other all over again in a way. So the offensive line has so many questions. I do expect it to be better, but I don't know how much that says about the unit just because, as you mentioned, no one believes they're any good to begin with.
Yeah, it's interesting now, too, that Justin Britt is the consistent one on the offensive line.
Right, yeah, he's the quote-unquote, like, veteran guy.
Yeah, and he's moved around, played every position. Hey, as far as the three-headed running back situation goes, who do you think will emerge as the primary back this season? And you think Eddie Lacy will be in Seattle in 2018?
The answer to the second question, I don't have one, but if I had to guess, I'd say yes. It's hard to like the Seahawks and like maybe the Cincinnati Bengals in like different ways are kind of good for those open box specials. You know, if you buy something, someone return like buying a refurbished cell phone almost, like they're good at like taking some damaged goods and flipping it into some value. And the Cincinnati Bengals do that with different words for or a different type of damaged goods. But it's hard to predict which ones will be flipped into something good. Like, for example, I don't think Geon Jordan will be, but I think Eddie Lacy will be. I think Eddie Lacy will be pretty effective here. He seems pretty money motivated, if nothing else, and he's got a lot of incentives in his contract to be really good. It remains to be seen how good he'll be behind this offensive line. That's an overlooked part of how good Marshawn Lynch was here, because those offensive lines weren't exactly, you know, fantastic, and he was fantastic behind them. So I think what will happen with Lacy, if I had to just guess now in like mid-July, is that he has a really good year, and yes, they keep him on. As for who will emerge, I think Eddie will get the nod to start the year with kind of he and Rawls being the exchanging like the first down guy role, and then it might just be a hot hand sort of thing, and just who's healthy, but more so a hot hand thing where Lacy kind of gets the nod. I think they brought him in to start, and then it kind of goes from there. And I would guess that Lacy, like we've seen Lacy be good, and we've seen Rawls be good. When we've seen Lacy be good, it's a Pro Bowl level. So I think he emerges, quote unquote, as a guy. I think that leads to him staying around, but man, that 2018 free agency is shaping up to be rough. Like it's shaping up, you know, you got, I believe Justin Britt's in that group, Jimmy Graham, Cam Chancellor, and then you got the guys on the 1-year deals now, Bradley McDougal, Eddie Lacy, Jokel. I guess it's going to be rough in 2018. So it's tough to say, but that's like my mid-July kind of forecasting. On Eddie Lacy.
Now, do you think this is going to be the year where Jermaine Kearse gets moved to the fourth option? Because we've got Richardson, Lockett, and Baldwin. If they're all healthy at the same time, that'd probably be a good thing. And then what are the possibilities? If we get a healthy Tyler Lockett and a healthy Paul Richardson, and I'm a huge Paul Richardson fan, I hope he stays healthy, what could those two accomplish this year if they stay healthy the entire season?
They can... And I'm sure Doug Baldwin would love this. They can really help get rid of the pedestrian tag. I mean, it's gone anyway because that happened, you know, before the Super Bowl. But you know, they went out and just destroyed Denver. But they're kind of, they can kind of form a three-headed thing too, just like the running backs. You know, you got Lacy, Rawls, Posey. They can kind of do that too. You know, Doug, it's clear. Doug's the number one guy. Whether you think he's top five, 10, whatever, I don't think that really matters. He's the number one guy. They have a number one guy. Lockett has shown that healthy Lockett can be a number two guy at the very least. Healthy Paul Richardson showed at the end of last year he can be a decent number two guy. I think that unit, with Jimmy Graham healthy, Tyler Lockett healthy, Paul Richardson healthy, and then Doug Baldwin, probably the best group of guys that Russ has probably had, like, in terms of weapons to throw to. I don't like mean to exclude Jermaine Kearse, but like those guys are dangerous. Like we've seen them be like super dangerous, and it's weird. Like there's this, if there was like a ranking of which Seahawks players fans hate the most, like I feel like Jermaine Kearse would be at the top, which is strange, considering all like the iconic moments he's had with the franchise. But yeah, look, you're looking at he's competing against like guys they've invested, you know, high draft picks in like Lockett and a Richardson. So I think that's a three-headed, a potentially pretty good three-headed monster too at receiver, and that's not even including the rookies they're bringing in too.
Again, want to remind our thousands of listeners that we are being graced by the presence of Michael Sean Dugar of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Awesome, awesome info from you, sir. I totally agree with you on Kearse, too. I think he's going to be the odd man. He might even be the fifth option by the end of the season. Moving forward, though, looking to the future, who has the best chance of being extended first, Cam Chancellor or Jimmy Graham?
That is such a great question. I'm doing like a series of 12 questions because there's everything 12 in this city, right. 12 off-season questions before training camp. I think I've already done one on Justin Britt, Jimmy Graham. I haven't done the Cam Chancellor one yet because it's so tough to project that because Cam, he's like his case is so different because it's like, yeah, safeties are valuable. He's a really good safety, and he's not really quote-unquote old yet. But he just plays such a style of play that you just can't feel comfortable about in terms of sustainability. Like I mentioned before, football is, you know, at its root, just guys running into each other, and no one runs into people better than Cam Chancellor.
Right.
Do you invest in a guy who's really good at running into people, so much so that he ran into his own teammate and hurt him? Obviously not intentionally, but like is at what point does his body just break down? Like, does he have a steady decline, or does he just go from being like this big bruiser to like just being made of glass? You know, like when does that, is that how his career kind of like declines? And just because there's that question, you just don't know. I guess it would be Jimmy Graham. I wrote actually that the franchise tag might be the option for Jimmy. I know the Seahawks don't really use the franchise tag. I don't think they have since 2010, and I believe it was on kicker. So I don't know how likely that is that they use it on Jimmy, but you kind of look at the numbers. Using on him for one more year, that kind of saves you a little bit from that like big cluster that is your 2018 free agency class. Maybe allows you to extend Cam. So I don't know. It's tough. Like that's probably why I haven't written the Cam Chancellor one, because you just don't know what they're going to do with him. But at the same time, he's so important to what they want to do. You know, we asked John Snyder about like the offensive line, and then he was like, he basically told us like, hey man, our defense super good, we invested in it, we had to go cheap somewhere, we went offensive line. So if they're going to be willing to spend, you would think it'd be the defense, but yeah, Cam's just so good at like hurting people that is he hurting himself too? You don't know.
Exactly. And your mention of 2018 is a brilliant segue, sir. What are the chances one of them won't be back in 2018?
One of that class?
Chancellor or Graham? Yeah.
Oh, what are the if I had to
put, please say no chance.
That's football is so unpredictable. It's crazy. I think people really forget that, and I think the Seahawks are such a good example of just how unpredictable things can be. Like, everyone swore up and down that Matt Flynn was going to be the guy, and then
right.
this Russell Wilson kid happens. You know, it's just football is just crazy like that. Or I can't say no chance. I would say there's no chance that both of them are gone, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think they let Cam walk and Jimmy walk. But there's definitely a chance one of them is not on the team. I want to say there's a good chance. I'm really scared of getting blasted for a hot take like a year later. That's one of my new fears, like a new age fear. Like, people are afraid of like spiders and things like that. I'm afraid of like becoming a meme. Like, I think people underestimate how scary being a meme is. Because like, you can be like a super funny one that people use for good things, but then you could just be like,
the crying
know,
Jordan.
You like, you could be crying Jordan, or you could be like crying Adam Morrison or something like that. This is completely off topic now, so excuse me real quick. But I was just talking to my coworker. I want someone to take the time to like create fake Twitter reactions to like historical events, like in the past. Like, what would Twitter have been like?
That's brilliant.
When the Bills just kept losing consecutive Super Bowls, or even like old boxing matches, just the Jackie Robinson era. Just, you know, just create Twitter reactions to that, because they'd be gold, you know. Like, that's one of my biggest fears. Sorry, I had to derail.
You were so right. You were so right.
Yeah, it's people underestimate that. Like, being a meme is like serious stuff these days. Like, memes are a thing, especially now that like the leader of our country is just on Twitter every day. It's like the internet
memes turn elections. Have more power.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I'm really scared of that. But I guess it's not really a hot take. I do think there's a good chance that one of them, Cam or Jimmy, is not on the team in 2018. Who that is, it's tough to tell, or who that will be, tough to tell. But I'd say, yeah, there's a good chance, like a real good chance that one of them they don't re-up on one of those guys.
Well, I have now become crying Jordan myself.
We got one last question here. What do you think the chances of this team – is this team going to be a contender for the next 3 years or 5 years? I mean, is the management looking forward to that far out?
It's interesting. I think did I just write about that today? I'm pretty sure I did. Because ESPN had its annual future rankings. There's so many rankings in the offseason. It's crazy. It's rankings of like how teams their situation based on like their future. I think Seahawks were number two behind the Patriots, and I was thinking, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, Russ is 28. I think everyone in the Legion of Boom is under 30. All of the receivers are under 30. I'm missing something else. But those were the three. Oh, and then like Pete Carroll is like the youngest and the oldest coach in the league at the same time. Somehow it makes sense. I don't know how to explain it any other way. Like, he really doesn't get old. Someone asked me how long he's going to do this. I mean, until he dies, probably. But
possibly,
I think, and I say that, I think the future looks good. You know, I think the headline we wrote was like, future's bright for the Seahawks, because it is. I believe they were the youngest team to ever win the Super Bowl. And that core is still there. Like, you still have – if you still got Pete and you still have – like, look at how many guys they had in the top 100. I know that's not the best way to gauge the talent. But, like, look how many guys they had in there. 8 guys in there. And it's all guys you expect to be around for a little bit, you know. And then that didn't include – Tyler Lockett, and that didn't include I'm missing a really important it didn't include KJ, you know. So it's like you got some really good, still young talent. In a way, it's like almost weird to see the Patriots ahead of them. Their quarterback's 39, and I mean, he wants to play until he's 45, but as I think I noted in my piece, you know, Father Time is the only man with a better win-loss record than Floyd Mayweather. So you got 39-year-old QB. How bright is your future? But then you realize that Bill Belichick is real close to, like, remaking the movie Invincible, where I can't remember who stars in it, but he Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, he's like a bartender and makes the Eagles. Like, Bill Belichick
Marky
is
Mark.
Real close to almost literally doing that, like taking a mailman and making him an all-pro tight end or something like that. Like, that's going to be a thing. I keep getting off on tangents. But the Seahawks, yeah, I think the future looks really good. Like, the quarterback's young. The defense is relatively young. Your coach doesn't age. You have a good front office. Like, that's really important. That's why the bad teams stay really bad for a long time when they have, like, bad ownership and management. You know, looking at you, Rams. But, you know, like, when teams are bad, it's probably because, you know, the front office. Also, look at the 49ers. The division's a mess, really. But that's another thing that I wrote, too. I mean, the Seahawks are the only team that you're confident they'll have a competent quarterback on the roster after next season. Like, quarterback situation in the division just looks awful. At the very least, they'll be able to win the division. And you'll always remain a contender when you win the division, because then you always go to the playoffs and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think the future looks good. Looks better than a lot of other teams, if nothing else.
That's awesome. Well, Michael Schell, we appreciate you being on. You've been a great guest, lots of insight, and we'd love to have you on again as the season, the off season finishes up and the season progresses. And can you let people know where they can read your stuff and find you on social media?
All right, promotion time. Let me shamelessly plug my Twitter first. So that's at Mike Dugar, MikeDugar. I would call it entertaining. I like to engage the audience. What else I need to shamelessly plug? Oh, Seahawks Man to Man podcast that I do every week with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Check that out on iTunes, Seahawks Man to Man. What else can I plug? Oh, I guess the website in general. Yeah, SeattlePI.com. Go to the sports tab. It's basically just me ranking a bunch of stuff right now because it's July. But check out everything I write because it's super cool. Anything else to plug? Can't think of it right now. I'd be a bad marketing director. But all three of those things, go ahead and shamelessly plug all those. And thank you guys for having me on anytime. Love doing it. Love hearing the sound of my own voice even more than Richard Sherman does. So
that is not
right on, man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
That gentleman is absolutely awesome.
He's great. He knows his stuff.
He does. We have another awesome gentleman. Yeah, well, I don't know if he's Mr. Dugar's league, but he's certainly way past my league. I'm not sure if he wants to speak, but we'll find out in a moment here. Ted.
Is it that Jet fan?
Hello? Oh, my goodness. I'm on the 12th Man Rising show. Look at what happened.
Exactly.
With my favorite folks. Of course, there's the 12th Man Rising show. Yeah, it's a great show. Now, guys, as always, thanks for letting me jump on here. And I think there was one question, or I could use your guys' help.
Yes, the team you should be rooting for does not wear green, not that color green. They wear action green. That's the team you should be rooting for.
I've decided.
Was that your question?
It's official.
It
I'm
going to
make a statement.
Uh-oh.
I'm leaving Gang Green. I'm done with them. I'm never going back.
That's
but I need you guys to help me find my next football team.
What do you mean?
There's a blue and green team.
You don't need help. You found the answer, sir. You're here. You've come home.
I am here.
You know what's home.
You know, I mean, here I am. You know, you guys out there on the left coast. I'm out here on the right coast, and Todd is chilling with Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, that's another topic. Ted, I'll just say, a quality fan deserves a quality team. You deserve the Seahawks, sir. You deserve the Seahawks. You've been suffering far too long. You've been suffering far too long. You're far too good a human to have to watch the Jets.
I mean, but you stole our coach.
Yeah, so.
but Mark Sanchez has never played for our team.
Oh, my God.
Listen,
I'm going to try and make this segment as awkward as Bill Murray on the ESPYs last night.
Good job.
No, but serious. I'm done with the Jets. I don't know if this classifies me or not, but yes, I do have a Russell Wilson jersey, but that's as far as it goes. What do you guys have to offer out there?
That's a good start. Russell Wilson jersey, good start. I got one of those myself.
I think that qualifies. I think that totally qualifies, don't you, Kevin?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in. You're already in.
Hey, I'm not. You know, people get off. They get on people for being bandwagon fans. Hey, man.
Yes.
If you're gonna root, you can root for my team anytime you want. And if you want to quit, that's fine. As long as you're rooting for my team, hey, I'll take you.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. All right. So I mean, as I guess now you can call me an official bandwagon Seahawk fan. What do I need to know? You know, outside of wearing my Russell Wilson jersey.
Ted, the team has been good for years. That's not a bandwagon fan. It's just you finally opened your eyes and realized what's going on. And they're not like an overnight success. You know, like, oh, look, the Falcons are finally good this year, and then they'll plummet back to the earth. Ha! Falcons plummet, get it? That's not a bandwagon fan. That's just okay. Finally realizing excellence has been waiting for you all this time.
I was thinking about, you know, going over to become a Giants fan.
I can see that. I can see that.
You know, I was seeing that. But, hey, even if that happens, which I doubt it would happen, like I said, I really need a solid team that's going to, you know, have a lot of offense, great defense, a quarterback who runs his mouth. What else? And a tight end that... I mean, tell me this much. You know, this is the 12th Man Rising Seahawks show. Are you guys really happy with Jimmy Graham, or do you expect the Jimmy Graham of the New Orleans Saints? Or is that even a fair question to ask?
I'll answer that question, but first of all, I got a question for you. Is it even legal to become a Giants fan after you've been a Jets fan? Is that even legal to do that?
Not even illegal to do that. Unless you're signing a contract. Brandon Marshall or Geno Smith. That's the only way you can do that.
Getting back to your Jimmy Graham question. When Jimmy Graham came to the Seahawks, I had expectations that he was going to blow the doors off of the tight end position like he did with the Saints. And then I realized, okay, Drew Brees is a little bit of a better passer than Russell Wilson, and it's a different setup. And, you know, Jimmy Graham is – I've got high expectations of Jimmy Graham, but it is what it is. And, you know, the Seahawks are a run-first offense. I think they still try to do that. I don't think the Saints were that. But I think he's fit into the Seahawks offense pretty well. But I do have high expectations for him to catch a lot of balls, especially inside the 20, which they haven't gone to him as much as I would like them to do.
Well, I think that's part of the thing is the opportunities. Seattle doesn't want to throw the ball 670 times. They're not going to win ball games that way. That's not their thing. So he's not going to get 140 targets or whatever, 150 targets, whatever he was getting in New Orleans. And that's not an exaggeration. That's about what he was getting. So you know, considering the system he's in, just like Kevin said, I mean, he's doing great for the system. I mean, he's not going to put up those numbers. If he's putting up the numbers that he did in New Orleans, there's problems with the running game, and we don't want problems with the running game. You know, I mean, that's one okay. thing that Pete was talking about. They want to run the ball 600 times because that's when they win Super Bowls, and that's when they go to Super Bowls. Not, they don't need Russell back dropping back and throwing as much as he was last season. So he's never going to have those huge stats, but being like the second best tight end in the league, you know, when you look at numbers, or maybe third, whatever, but still, he's doing everything they need him to do. He fits in great, which is kind of scary when Mike was talking about, oh, well, you know, we'll see. One of them will probably be gone in 2018. That makes me really ill. And to be honest, if one of them is going to be gone, I would rather see Jimmy Graham gone than Cam.
Of course.
You can get another tight end. Not as good as Jimmy Graham, but, I mean, I think there's a huge drop-off from Cam Chancellor to anybody else compared to Jimmy Graham. So, you know.
Yeah, when you got a linebacker playing safety, that is a big hole to fill.
That is. Exactly. That is.
Exactly.
Hey, I do have one other question. Other question is, and I'm getting myself prepared to be a Seattle Seahawks fan, but how long am I going to have to listen to sound bites of Richard Sherman, you know, chirping about Steph Curry's contract and MLB contracts and NBA contracts? Why is that even a discussion topic? Shouldn't they be focused on training camp?
Not right now.
Because somebody asked Sherman the question, and he's going to answer it. get used to it. He angles
oh,
not.
Oh, my goodness.
No. He'll be 85 years old, and he'll be answering questions. And,
well, what was he suggesting today, that the players are going to have to go on strike to get more guaranteed money?
Yeah. Come on. And with him being such a vocal person, Todd, I want to ask this question to you because you know Seahawks. My question was, how close was he, meaning Richard Sherman, to no longer being a Seattle Seahawk this offseason?
Kevin definitely needs to follow up on this too, but from everything I've seen, not very close at all. They've said that, you know, this was strictly a move, they being both Sherman and the team, that this was this thing that they do every year. It's like, okay, what are our options? What can we possibly get for this talent? You know, there are no guaranteed starters, as they make plain in training camp. If someone wins the job, they win the job. And it would be the same thing if they could get more talent. But they made it clear that it was going to be a very high price for Richard Sherman, and it was, and it should be, and they didn't get the offer, so he's on. I'm sure they would be happy if he didn't, you know, run down the offensive play selection. But the flip side of that is, don't make stupid calls. Then he won't complain. He could be a little less vocal about it, but no one can say he's wrong. He may be going about it in the wrong way, but you can't say he has the wrong opinion. And he's just going to talk about it. And like Carol says, you know, everyone, you can't treat everyone the same. People are not the same. Why would you treat them the same? That doesn't work. You know, that's how good organizations work. You treat everybody the way you need to treat them to maximize what they can do for the organization. That's any organization. And not many organizations, I'm not talking just about football, but anything, not many of them get that. And, you know, if you want to call it special treatment, okay, it's special treatment. But it's treating them as individuals and understanding how you can best help them do their job, and that's what Carol is great about. And if it includes letting Sherman run his mouth, well, you know, as long as he plays on the field, I don't care what he says, as long as he delivers.
Yeah, and Richard Sherman he's a very intelligent man. I mean, he's smart. I think everything he does is calculated, and if if the management of the Seahawks tried to say, all right, Richard, we need you to pipe down a little bit and, you know, kind of keep your opinions to yourself. Imagine what would happen on that. You know, he'd come out and start talking about that. And, you know, I think the trade talk and all that stuff goes back to, you know, people say, well, it's not for sale. Everything's for sale for the right price. And so, and I would venture to say that everybody in the league, every team in the league would say that about every player. You know, it's like, hey, if somebody comes to me with the right amount of money and the right price, yeah, I'm gonna let them go. And I think they were smart to admit that, hey, yeah, we're talking about it, as opposed to denying it. And then it comes out later that, oh, they were talking about trading Richard Sherman, but they lied about it. So, I mean, it's one of these things, hey, yeah, I mean, it's what we did, and you know, it's kind of gone by the wayside now, but, you know, nobody was denying it, so.
Yeah, Herschel Walker was for sale. So, I mean, you know, and that was long before he was on the downside. So, yeah, everybody's for sale. If you're running an intelligent organization, got to be. So, yeah, I don't think it was any big deal.
All right. Gotcha. I guess this is my Seahawks 101, and hopefully I'll be able to come back during this season and let you know about my fandom and all the above.
One thing you need to do, Ted, is pray for the offensive line.
Okay.
I think they'll be a lot better this year. I really do, and we'll get into that. You want to get into that right now, Kevin?
Sure.
What you see. A lot, obviously, of what Mike was talking about, you know, Jokel, you're not really sure what you're getting with Jokel just because of the injury issues. And I loved what he said about Fant and his admission that, you know, oh, he really feels good about, you know, he knows exactly what's going on. And that's scary when the left tackle admits that he didn't know what was going on last season. That's really scary. But he's gained what? Has he put on what, 25 pounds?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And now he's very comfortable with the plays, and Walter Jones, of all people, has been tutoring him. I mean, you know, you get a guy who's possibly the best left tackle ever helping you on technique and understanding systems and everything. Yeah, he should be a lot better. So I don't see any reason that they shouldn't be, like, in the middle of the pack in the offensive line instead of – depending what ranking system you use, they rank 26th or 29th in the league on both run blocking and pass blocking. That's not great. That's not going to get it done. But if they can get to the middle, I mean, that'd be a huge improvement. What is your take?
Yeah, I agree. It is huge. And I think, you know, there's still a lot of question marks on offensive line. I mean, Jokel, I hope he plays. I mean, he's still, you know, recovering.
True, yeah.
From surgery, but, you know, if Fetty should be better, Justin Britt, I mean, he's, like I said before, he's kind of the cornerstone or the centerstone of that offensive line now, which is, two years ago, I don't think anybody would have said that, you know, get rid of him. He's worthless. You know, and then Glowinski, you know, we'll see what happens with him, but, it's a big question mark, but again, like Michael Sean was saying, they can't get any worse. let's hope they can't get any worse. You know, one of the things last year too is Russell Wilson he was injured majority of the season, and you know, if they can keep him from taking as many hits as he was taking, yeah, that'd be a benefit right there. I mean, he's pretty durable guy, but man, he's not that big, and he takes some pretty brutal hits, and he likes to run, and he knows how to go down when he's running forward. But when he's running backwards away from people and gets surprised, he gets pretty smashed. And so if they can just keep a little more heat off him, give him another half to three quarters of a second to throw the ball, get rid of it, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And he doesn't have to play the man named Sue right off the bat either. So that helps, because, you know, hopefully most of the people will not be hitting him in a questionable manner. Let's just put it that way. Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
I accidentally rolled onto you and, you know, stomped on your sternum or whatever little tricks he has. Man, I swear. I'm also a Dolphins fan. And when they signed Sue, I was so mad. I was so, and I'm still kind of mad about it. I mean, not really. Yeah, the production great. The production hasn't quite been there. I don't care if he plays the best defensive tackle, you know, unbelievably better than everybody else. I don't like the way the guy plays. I really wish they had not signed him. It just pisses me off to no end. I just hate this crap that he pulls. Oops, excuse me. Sorry, I stomped a mud hole in your mother. I mean, come on, dude.
On TV.
Yeah, exactly.
During Thanksgiving.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. Back to the Seahawks. Earl Thomas, do we think he's going to be back 100%? I mean, as 100% as NFL players can be.
I heard he's back better than he thought he would be already and better than anybody expected. And I read something on from Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune reporting that he's looking full on right now. So I think he's going to be back. And, you know, it's a big change and a relief for Seahawks fans, at least for me, from him saying, I'm thinking about retiring. It's like, oh
gosh,
no.
Yeah.
No, please.
Yeah, and understandably, that was the day. I mean, that was within, 2 hours of the injury? So,
yeah.
Understandable. So, yeah, that's huge, him coming back. And I've read the same things, that he's way ahead of schedule, so that looks good. Lockett seems to be taking a little longer, but, I mean, it's not like he's running behind schedule. He's just not amazingly ahead like Earl Thomas was. So the last topic that our fearless leader, Lee, gave us, the whole thing about the issues in the Seahawks locker room. I've written about it. I've written about it, I think, 5 times now, and not because I really want to, but just because it keeps coming up for no discernible reason. We asked, of course, I mean, there's a reason for us to ask Michael Sean about it, because it's been such a big thing, and this is the first time we've spoken with him in a while. So I absolutely agree with him. It's just, you've got alpha males. During the season, you've got 53 alpha males, and you've got the guys who want to be alpha males, and they're on the taxi squad and the practice squad, but they're still alpha males. Yeah, there's going to be issues, but yeah, they don't all need to be singing Kumbaya. They just need to be able to work together, and absolutely they can work together. And as he pointed out, there was a huge fight the night before their biggest win ever. So those were definitely locker room issues. Those were such locker room issues. The person in question wound up with the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. So,
yes.
And again, you're very welcome for taking him off our hands. Oh my God, what a wreck that was. His big play, he added to a 22-0 lead. He's like, yay, you're so important. Good riddance, dude. There's no locker room issues. No more so than there are in any other locker room. You want to see locker room issues? Go to the 49ers. There's locker room issues. You know, when you're winning 3 games, you got locker room issues there for sure. Any team that's struggling, they're going to have locker room issues. When you're winning, there's no locker room issues. No serious locker room issues, I don't think.
Hey, Todd, you made a reference to the 49ers because
yes,
it's another failing NFC West team. Did you mean check out the locker room before, during, or after Kaepernick? Because they were all train wrecks.
And, of course, we were writing about Kaepernick a lot because of all the issues or the conjecture that he might wind up with the Seahawks, since they remain the only team that talked to the guy, which completely blows my mind. Not that he's a great quarterback, but he's a really good quarterback. And he's better than a lot of guys who have starting gigs, which that just blows my mind. But anyway, he did get the leadership award from his team. His fellow players said he was the leader of the team. Seems like all this conjecture from people who don't agree with his political viewpoints. And I get that. I understand. I have no problem with his viewpoints. I support how he goes about it. But I understand people that might not. But to say that, he's going to cause problems in the locker room, clearly not. That was an awful team. And he was about the only damn good player on that team. I mean, single-handedly, he almost beat the Seahawks. Single-handedly, he almost beat the Dolphins. That's a terrible team. And he had a really good season. The Niners could be much better this year. I mean, they actually have a coach. It appears, surprisingly, they actually have a GM. I mean, some of those moves they were pulling on draft day, you know, there was a lot of talk when he got the gig, and it was like, he's got no experience whatsoever. He's a talking head. He's a smart talking head.
Right.
But he's a talking
head. Yes, he is.
Turns out he's very smart. I mean, Lynch pulled off some really bright moves. I don't think the Seahawks need to worry about the 49ers this season. But next season, 2018, that could be the time. I mean, because if you get the right people in at the top of a team, things can change really quickly in the NFL. Very quickly. And I would not be surprised to see them have a winning season in 2018. They won't win the division, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them go 9-7, honestly. I mean, if they pull off the same kind of moves next season as they did this season and better leadership, Seahawks, I think, will be getting better, but Rams don't really look like they're going anywhere. And the Cardinals, I mean, their quarterback is about the same age as Brady, and he's not a freaking android. You know, he is going on the downhill side. So, yeah, I actually think the 49ers will be challenging in just a couple of years. They won't be there, but they'll be in the conversation. So, what do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, no, I'm going to touch on that Kaepernick thing for a bit. I don't know that Kaepernick would cause a problem in the locker room per se. I don't know that would be an issue. I think the issue would be with the media. I mean, just answering questions and teammates having to answer questions. The locker room thing, I'm like, whatever. And here's my take. Regardless of what I think of his political views, and I heard some people on Twitter, oh, if they sign Kaepernick, I'm not going to root for the Seahawks anymore. Okay,
right.
Bye-bye. You're one of those bandwagon fans that I was talking about. And you know what? Because I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm not a fan of one individual. And guess what? If they sign Colin Kaepernick for the right money, and that's the only thing I would say, for the right money, and he makes my team better, bring him on. I mean, that political stuff, you know, whatever. I'm not really a big fan of all that stuff that went on. But if he makes my team better, bring him on. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's about making your team better. I really don't think anything's going to go on in the locker room. It's just the media questions and the media making a big deal about it. That's kind of my take on it. But
yeah, that's a very good point, because it would be a big media storm.
I would just say that, number one, we saw this when Tebow signed with the Jets.
Yep.
I think there's a problem when your backup is getting all this attention and would have, you know, 10 or 15 writers around, you know, journalists literally sitting around his locker room after every game, before, during, and every game. It just not that I have an issue with Kaepernick's message. I don't think he doesn't, you know, love America. There are some issues that, you know, that we're not going to touch upon tonight on this show, but there are issues that, you know, that exist in America.
Mm-hmm.
We all know them. We all dance around them. I just think for the Seahawks itself, you know, it's as close as to a well-oiled machine. Even though you got, you know, alpha males, I think that would have just been a little too much for them. That and whatever the compensation he was looking for.
I think it came down to the compensation, personally, even though they deny it and no numbers have ever come out. But
right.
I just don't see him knowing that he should be a starting quarterback. I mean, there's 10 teams
right.
he should be starting for. I really don't see him settling for the money that Austin Davis settled for. That makes no sense. And he may wind up doing that, or he was in – is he still in Ghana? I don't know if you guys know if he's still in Ghana or not, but, I mean, he's not exactly sweating the NFL right now.
Oh, no.
I mean, he's doing what he wants to do, what he thinks is important, which is awesome. He's being a human being instead of, I'm a football player, you know. So right. I give him all the credit in the world. I would like to see him play. I mean, geez.
I would too. I think he's one of the best athletes. He's one of the best athletes out there, I think, as far as quarterbacks. He's big. He's fast. He's strong. He's got an arm. I mean, what Richard Sherman said, he sure doesn't look like he's running fast, but he is.
Houston Texans, Broncos, Chicago Bears, any of those teams need him?
It's true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, God, if he's on the Texans, like Lee said, if he's on the Texans, they're in the Super Bowl. And I agree.
Mm-hmm. Last year, when the whole thing came out, no, it was either last year or the year before, when the rumbling started coming out with Kaepernick and whether or not he was going to opt out, I did see him coming to the Jets. I did. Only because the Jets have nothing else to offer, and they would be on the back page of the Daily News, Post, and Newsday, and possibly New York Times. He would have some type of quote, and that at that time, you know, Woody Johnson had nothing else to offer except those, you know,
right.
super expensive PSLs. So, but I was shocked when that didn't happen, and I was just like, oh, okay, well, they missed their shot.
Well, it could still happen. He's out there. Not likely, but I'll be surprised if he's not playing on some team. Maybe not at the beginning of the season, but by the end of the season.
Yeah, somebody's going to get hurt.
Exactly.
Somebody's going to get hurt, and somebody's going to come looking for Kaepernick, and he's going to go, really? Huh. Interesting. How much are you offering?
Listen, when Ryan Tannehill went down towards the end of the season for the Dolphins, Adam Gase put a call out to Peyton Manning, not to see who do you recommend, but to say, hey, do you want to suit up? You know, I'm thinking if that happens again, or any other team in that similar situation that happens again, why would you not? Why would you not reach out for Kaepernick? I mean, that's just insane. So.
Yeah, he may get the call before John Kitna does this time. I don't know.
Oh, God.
You might be right.
Come on now, Ted. John Kitna is the man.
Yo, I remember that stuff with Dallas. Oh, my goodness. What is he teaching math or history?
Yeah,
what is he
teaching down in Tacoma, Washington, yeah.
All right. Shout out to John Kitna.
I think Wilson High School, is it Wilson or maybe Stadium? I'm not sure which one, but he's down there.
Pretty awesome. Well, I have nothing to add to the conversation. Actually, that's nothing different from the beginning of the show. But at this point, I clearly have nothing to add to the conversation. Kevin, anything else? Ted, do you want to fully proclaim your allegiance and love for the Seattle Seahawks?
I'm going to sit this one out right now, and I'm going to study the Seahawks for the next couple of weeks.
And I will
hopefully come back and do a commitment show on the 12th Man Rising.
Ted,
stay tuned.
There's a 24-hour window. We need a commitment. We're going to be talking to your agent.
One thing I suggest, Ted, if you're looking for information on the Seahawks, there's a website called 12th Man Rising by FanSided. Go to that website and read that. Read all the information there.
Is it the same site that I have this wonderful app that just pushes out badge apps of all the new articles of all the journalists and bloggers? Is that the same website?
The very same website. Pops up on your phone as Seattle Football.
Seattle Football, you got it.
Seattle Football. Pops up on my phone, which is really weird when you write something that's like, oh, look, it's on my phone. How fun. And it was just on my computer 2 hours ago. Ted, plug yourself.
I want to thank you so much for having me on the show as a special guest. I didn't provide any substance because similar to Mr. Michael Sean, but hopefully I did provide some comedy relief. And I will tell you this much. As always, love joining the show in whatever format as guest host. guest, contributor, water boy. But if you don't like me in any of those roles, you can catch me every Sunday, 1240 AM WGBB. That's AM 1240 WGBB.com, where we do Late Night Parents, and we also air our podcast on Wednesday nights on the Happy Hour Network. So best way to follow me is just go to latenightparents.com, and there will be a latest blog and or video and the latest podcast that are available there. So as always, guys, thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. And Ted won't go away because Ted has power. Anyway, Ted finally left. Now we can talk bad about Ted. Anyway, yes, and of course I do write for 12th Man Rising. I write about a third as well as Lee, and about a fourth as well as all our other writers, which means the other writers write better than Lee, and they're all excellent writers. I highly recommend the site. And with that, I leave it to you to close out the show, because you're the only person on who is not comic relief, Kevin.
Go Hawks!
Russell, though, looking down the middle. Now he steps up. Now he scrambles right. Still looking. Pumps. Now he throws down the sideline. Jimmy Graham reaching up. Makes the catch. Is he inbounds? He is. The basketball player boxes out the defender. He outjumps him down at the one-yard line. And that's why you went out and got number 88 to make a play for you that way.